If you're familiar with the Christian Bible or the Jewish Torah, you may have heard this before. In both, Leviticus says, you should love your neighbor as yourself. And in the New Testament of the Bible, Matthew seconds that. 1 John 4:7 says it in a different way. Dear friends, let us love one another. And Mark 12:31 repeats the words of Matthew, and Luke and James say the same things. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, I am seeing a trend here. I'm not sure about you. But this neighbor love, it isn't just a Christian idea. Buddha taught a couple of thought-provoking things. He said, hatred does not cease by hatred, but only by love. This is an eternal rule. And he said, holding on to anger is like grasping a hot coal with the intent of throwing it at somebody else. You're just the one that gets burned. According to the Hindus, Krishna taught, do not get angry or harm any living creature. Be compassionate and gentle. Show goodwill to all. And Rama added, love means giving selflessly, excluding none, including all. Muhammad followed the trend. A true Muslim is the one who does not defame or abuse others. But the truly righteous becomes a refuge for humankind, their lives and their properties. If you seek to love your Creator, love your fellow beings first. For those who don't believe in a supreme being, there is a similar call, based on enlightened self-interest and a belief in ethics. It says, look, treat people the way you would want to be treated. It makes sense. And if you work for Google, we have it simply, don't be evil. All these sound really straightforward. Love your neighbor. That sounds great. But what does it mean? In the 60s, the Beatles told us that all we needed was love. And at some level, this struck an incredible chord. We may not have understood what the heck they were talking about, but we got this piece. It was generations of theology spelled out in words that made sense. And we got it, or we thought we got it anyway, because let's face it, some of us also got meaning from I am the walrus, and he got toe jam football, he got monkey finger. Some people get meaning out of almost anything. It was a weird decade. But as we heard Karen sing this morning, and as the Beatles told us, nothing we could create through work, writing or singing or speaking or building, couldn't be duplicated by someone else. Anything we can do can be done. But the one thing that each of us can do that no one else can, no one anywhere, is to be ourselves and to learn to love that self and the other selves around us. Now, we all understand this is speaking pretty broadly. No one but the Beatles could have written their music. No one but Picasso could have helped to co-found the Cubist movement in painting. But others could have revolutionized music and art. When it's time for something, historians have found that most things develop simultaneously in different places. If not the Beatles, another group would have risen and become the focus of the British invasion, or maybe it would have been the Romanian invasion or the Italian. But we still would have had a new style of music. So how do we stand in relation to our neighbors? Why are we called to love them? That word implies a lot more than just being their buddy, dropping off a loaf of bread once in a while. Why love? And one of the best pieces I have found to explain why love, who your neighbor is in relation to you, and why you should love from the depth of your heart, is an anonymous writing that many of you may have seen. It's called Meeting God. And I'm going to go through it. It begins like this. You were on your way home when you died. It was a car accident. It's nothing particularly remarkable, just fatal. You left behind a spouse and two children. It was a painless death. The EMTs tried to save you, but no avail, and your body was utterly shattered. So you're better off. Trust me on this. And that's when you met me. Wait, what happened, you ask? Where am I? You died, I said. There's no point mincing words. There was a truck and it was skidding. Yeah, I got that, I said. I died? Yeah, but don't feel bad about it. Everyone dies. You looked around and there was nothing but you and me. What is this place, you ask? Is this the afterlife? More or less. Are you God, you asked? Yeah, I said, I'm God. My kids, my wife, you said. What about them? Will they be okay? It's what I like to see, I said. You've died, but your concern is your family. That is good. That's good stuff. And you looked at me with fascination, and to you, I didn't look like God. I looked like some person, some vaguely authoritarian figure, maybe a grammar school teacher. Don't worry, I said. They'll be fine. Your kids will remember you as good and perfect. Your spouse, well, they knew you a little better. So, you said, what happens now? Do I go to heaven? Hell? Somewhere? Nah, I said, you'll be reincarnated. Oh, so the Hindus were right. No, not so much. All the religions are right in their own way. Walk with me. And you followed along as we strolled through the void. So where are we going? Nowhere, I said. It's just kind of nice to walk. So what's the point, you ask? When I get reborn, I'll be a blank slate, a baby. Everything I did in this life won't matter. Ah, you will have within you all of the knowledge and experience of your past life. You just don't remember them right now. I took you by the shoulders and said, your soul is more magnificent and beautiful and gigantic than you can possibly imagine. A human mind can only contain a tiny bit of what you are. It's like putting your finger in a thing of water to see if it's hot or cold. You put the tiniest part of yourself in, and when you bring it back out, it's gained every experience that the whole jar has had. You've been human for the last, 40 years? You haven't stretched out yet and felt the rest of your immense consciousness. Now, if we hung out here longer in between, you'd start remembering everything. But there's no point in doing that between each life. So how many times have I been reincarnated, you ask me? Oh, yeah, lots and lots. This time around, you'll be a Chinese peasant girl in 540 A.D. Wait, you said. You're sending me back in time? Well, I guess technically, time, as you know, it only exists in your universe. Things are different for me. Well, where are you from, you asked? Well, I come from somewhere else, and there's others like me. I know you want to know what it's like there, but trust me, you won't get it. You looked a little disappointed. You said, but wait, if I get reincarnated to other places, could I have interacted with myself at some point? Sure. Happens all the time, and with both lives only aware of their own time span, you don't even know it's happening. So what's the point, you asked? Really? You're asking me for the meaning of life? Isn't that a little stereotypical? Well, it's reasonable, you said. I looked in your eye and I said to you, the meaning of life, the reason I made this whole universe, is for you to mature. You mean mankind, you said. You want us all to mature. No. You. Just you. I made this whole universe for you. With each new life, you grow and mature and become greater. What about everybody else, you said? There is no one else. In this universe, there is only you and only me. And you stared at me blankly and you said, but what about all the people on Earth? All you. All different incarnations of you. Wait, I'm everybody? Now you're getting it, I said. I think I even slapped you on the back. I'm every human who ever lived, or ever will live, yes. I'm Abraham Lincoln. And you're John Wilkes Booth. I'm Hitler. And you are the 6 million he killed. I'm Jesus. And you're everyone who followed him. And you're those who killed him. Every time you victimize someone, you were victimizing yourself. Every act of kindness you've done to yourself. Every happy and sad moment who has been experienced by any human was experienced by you. Why, you ask me? Because you someday will be like me. That's what you are. You're my kind. You mean I'm God? You ask. No, I said, not yet. You are a fetus. You are growing. When you have lived every human life through all time, you will have grown enough to be born. So the whole universe, you said, it's just your egg, I answered. Now it's time to move on to your next life. And I kicked you out. What a metaphor for our independent web. What a metaphor for who we are. The Beatles would have loved it because I am he as you are he, and you are me, and we are all together. Why do we love our neighbor no matter how different? Because they are us. That takes care of the why. It leaves us with another question. How do we love our neighbor? We see all kinds of images, romantic love, and most of us are pretty sure that loving that tall, strange guy that lives down the street and waves once in a while doesn't involve chocolates or flowers. We get that. In Christian tradition, this kind of love is called agape. In Judaism, chesed. In Sanskrit, metta, or loving kindness. Paraphrasing a theologian named O.C. Quick, he was Anglican, he said, if you could imagine the love of one who loves people purely for their own sake, not because of any need or desire of their own, purely desires the other person's good, and yet loves them wholly, not for what at this moment they are, but for what they can become, we see agape. Theologians and wise people across the centuries have debated long and hard about how do we show this kind of love? How do we live? How do we need to be? And by the time I got done reading everything, it felt like I would need to spend my life in a frozen state of mindfulness, hyper-worried I wouldn't get it right somehow if I tried to do all the things they told me I needed to. And then I realized it's not that hard. The Beatles really did get it right. It's so simple that even my slightly defective cat, Dippy, She gets it right. See, when Dippy was little, she wasn't allowed up in our bedroom at night. But every morning he'd open the door. And she would come flying up those steps as fast as her legs could move, purring top of her lungs, little tail straight up in the air, jump on the bed, start kneading right here. She still does it, this little walnut-brained cat. This cat who falls off tables and into toilets and tubs, who gets trapped on doors and windowsills, chokes herself drinking hot coffee, sits in full cereal bowls. This is who the Forrest Gump phrase, "I am not a smart man," was written about. But she knows how to love. She's not helpful. She can be mean and occasionally dangerous. She doesn't bring conversation or wisdom, solutions or salvation. She brings the foundation of love, presence. To our meetings, she brings her whole self, expects nothing of me but to be there. This is the first and maybe the greatest way to love, to be present with your whole self, to be you, and to accept the other person purely as who they are. While the situation itself may not be pleasant, you are there with another human being. You see their reality, recognize and respect their story without overwriting it with how they should be, might be, could be, if only this or that. Experience your neighbor as they are. Respect their reality, even if it does not coincide with your own. Be truly present with them when you are together and you have begun to love. Come on, if my walnut brain cat can do it, we can do it. If you're truly present with others, it becomes much easier to take the next step, to stop insisting that you come first, that your view is the only important one, your way the correct one. Without this protective layer of selfishness, we're able to hear and examine what others have to say more clearly, and sometimes to recognize they have a better way, a wiser idea, a truth that resonates for us too, and sometimes the same goes for us. If I am you and you are me and we are all together, there is no shame or pain in doing it, whatever it is, my way or your way. We are me, and the best way is the way that works, no matter which head the idea swam into. By being truly present with others and recognizing that sometimes others need to come first, we love. It is that simple. And after all, love is all you need. Amen.